Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 37 of the Low Carb Universe Show. Hello, Hanna.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I am just fine. I can't wait to hear what you are going to tell us today, because today we are going to talk about what Hanna did the other week. And I've been following you. You've been telling me what you've been doing, but I so want to hear much more about your travel through the Champagne District.
Yes, I recently took a road trip to the wonderful and bubbly area of Champagne in France. The real Champagne, because of course there are different regions, but you can only that make bubbly wine, like sparkling wine.
Yeah.
But you can of course only call yourself Champagne if you're made within this actually quite small region. There are I think it was about 350 plus villages, and that's it.
Oh.
Unless you are from one of those villages, you have to be something else, like Cremant, there is in France as well, or Cava in Spain, or Prosecco in Italy,
yep.
Or Franciacorta in Italy, for example, as well. They could be the same, but the quality is not the same, so they can't call themselves Champagne.
It's not just the quality, it's the place as well.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely,
yeah.
Because they have a very special ground that they grow the vines on in Champagne, and there's a very special mineral combination that makes it taste so...
Oh, tell us all about it, honey. I do think that we have to say that we're not drinking bottles of champagne each and every day, none of us. And we're not romantic. We can see this as a part of one of our core values, enjoying life. You have to put some sparkle on your days sometime. You could be a great laugh, and it could be hugging someone dear, and it could be a glass of champagne.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if all of our two listeners know how we make champagne.
Yeah.
But I was going to go through the basics anyway, which is sort of standard for most of the champagne houses. So for champagne, you have the choice of using three grapes. Those are the only ones that grow in the Champagne area, in the Champagne region.
Mm-hmm.
And they are Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay. I'm sorry for everyone who speaks French, because I will rip your language apart in this.
I thought it sounded good. Sounds good.
Anyway, all of these three grapes, they are harvested by hand. No machines in the Champagne region are allowed. Mm-hmm. And then they're taken to the Champagne house. They are pressed. And then they're left in vats to ferment the first round. And that is, you know, you just add a little bit of yeast and stuff, or just actually yeast. And so it, you know, ferments naturally with the sugar in the grape juice, so to speak. And this is kept in these vats by grape. So there's no mixing at this point.
Okay.
Usually. And they're kept there for about 2 weeks for that first fermentation.
Huh?
Then it's blended. It's bottled. And then it's kept in the bottle in the cellars for about, well, it can be minimum 15 months, but it can go for years, of course, for these really fancy vintage things that I'll go over later.
Yeah.
And that's when the second fermentation happens, and you get all this like gooey stuff in the bottle, which of course shouldn't be there. So after the second fermentation, they do something that they call degorgement. Which is basically they make sure that all the sediment is in the bottle of the in the neck of the bottle of the champagne bottle,
uh-huh.
And then they freeze this the little part of the bottle to -25 degrees, and then they either open the cork by hand or by machine. It has to be by hand if it is an older one that is getting ready for consumption.
I just have to ask you something about freezing it. Did they actually do this when the champagne was born?
That I'm not sure.
I don't think
the monk Dom Perignon started brewing little champagne in his monastery. I don't think so. But this is the way they do it now anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And so basically then the sediment forms an ice cube. And then when you open the bottle with the gas, it sort of shoots out the ice, the ice cube. And that's the point where they add sugar. It's not until then. Until then, all champagnes are actually naturally no added sugar. Okay. And then they put the real cork on, the one that we find on the bottle that we buy in the store.
Yeah.
And then, you know, wait a couple of days or something for the sugar to dissolve. And then they, you know, get it ready for shipment and put the label on and all this stuff, do all the fancy things.
Yeah.
But that is basically how you make champagne in the basic sort of, those are the ground rules.
Yeah.
And after that, they can get quite creative.
Okay.
And then also you may have seen on a bottle that it says Grand Cru or Premier Cru.
Yeah.
And Cru is just nothing else but a village. So, yes. And some of these 350 plus villages are then labeled Grand Cru, and some of them are labeled Premier Cru. Of course, there are fewer Grand Crus than Premier Crus. But anyway.
Yeah.
So this is the only thing that this is significant for is it depends on where the grapes are grown. It's nothing else, actually. So that was something new I learned.
Okay.
And if it is a mix between grapes from a Grand Cru, so a Grand Village, or a Premier Cru, so a Premier Village, even if the Grand Cru is mixed with 1% premium, it is a Premier Cru. So Grand Crus are this sort of whole-blooded sort of thing.
Yeah.
And Grand Cru has all limestone as a base, and that's why it's so special. Yeah, and there's no, as I mentioned, the three grapes, there's no Pinot Meunier in Grand or Premier Cru because they don't grow there.
Okay.
So that's very interesting.
Okay.
And then also you may have heard about vintages. So there's a vintage bottle of wine and there's a special bottle of wine or champagne. So basically all that vintage is that it's from a single year of harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, from White and Chandon, there's a 2009, which has 2009 written very clearly on the label. And that means that 2009 was a very good champagne year. It was actually a Pinot Noir year. 2006 was the last vintage that they made before that, and that was a Chardonnay year, so there was more Chardonnay.
Awesome.
I know. I learned so much.
I know. No idea. I just drink it, you know. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah. This was such a great thing because before this trip, that's exactly what I've been doing. I'm like, low sugar, great. Drink it. Does it taste good? Yes. But it was fun to learn all these little things. Anyway, if it's not a vintage, like all these other bottles that you may buy from the champagne area, then they are blends. So that could mean anything from 70% of the current year, current harvest, to 30% reserve wine. So, of course, every wine year has a slightly different flavor and taste and characteristic. So they blend it so that the signature champagne bottle always tastes the same. So if you like a particular champagne today, you're going to like it in 5, 10, 20 years because they're going to make sure that it has the same sort of flavor and characteristics.
Yeah.
And vintages, this is very interesting because this is highly low carb, of course. And because, like I said before, you don't add the sugar until the very end of production. So technically all champagnes should be, although they're not, because some of them are added very, very much sugar and we don't like them. Anyway, the vintages, the more expensive ones are always extra brut, which is max 5 grams of sugar per liter.
Yeah.
So that is really good if you want to make sure that you have a very low sugar wine. then that is what you're looking for. And even if it's not zero, 5 grams per liter, that means about a couple of gram, not even a gram per glass.
But I have to ask you something. Here in Sweden, at the Systembolag, it's the only shop where you can buy wines and liquors and so. We, on the price labels, on the shelves, you can see the sugar amount.
And that's really, really good. That's why I love Systembolaget.
Yes, because you can't see it. You can't on the bottle, you know.
But actually, one of the houses that we visited actually has it printed on the bottle. How much the dosage? So how much
Great.
Sugar they add to the end? And I'll tell you more about it a little bit later.
Yep.
Anyway, going back to vintages, the vintages can be stored in your own shelf at home for just as long as it's been in the cellar. So for example, the 2009 vintage has then been lying in the cellar for 7 years. So you can store it at home for 7 more years. If it's not a vintage champagne, it should be drank within the year, which is very difficult to judge because you don't know when the disgorgement was. You don't know when. It could have been a year ago when you bought it. It can be a year ago from, you know, next week. I mean, yeah, it can be very different. So non-vintages should be drank rather quickly.
Do you ever have a storage of cava bottles at home or champagne?
I do now.
Yeah, I don't store it, so I just buy one bottle now and then. But this is something that I'm sucking all your knowledge into my brain.
And then, of course, rosé sparkling wine.
Yeah,
and rosé champagne, it can be made in 2 ways.
Okay,
so either because then it is of course used with partially red grapes.
Yeah,
it makes sense. And the first way, the more traditional but more unpredictable way, is to soak the skin of the red grapes for longer to get that color.
Aha.
But it's very unpredictable. So if you have a big production, it might not be the best because, of course, you can't guarantee that it's the same color and the same sort of everything like that. Mm. So what's usually done nowadays is that they also make a red wine.
Okay.
The champagne houses from the Pinot Noir or Pinot Meunier grape. And then they mix the normal, so to speak, champagne with some red wine. It can be anything from 3% to, I think we tried one with 19%. And of course, that can affect the sugar content. But if you keep the champagne itself sugar-free or non-dosage, then of course it doesn't add that much because these grapes are also dry. And then something really interesting that I also learned was, of course, that actually the preferred size for a champagne bottle is not the normal 0.75 liters.
Okay.
It's actually the Magnum.
It is the Magnum.
It is the Magnum because there you apparently get all the flavors develop easier in that bigger bottle.
Yeah, I actually went to a wedding like 100 years ago where they had this Nebuchadnezzar. I think it's
really, really, really big one. Yeah.
And the bride's father, he... You know, when you saber it, do you say saber?
Yeah. Oh,
he sabered it. And it was so cool. But that must have been really good then, because that's a huge bottle.
Apparently, that is not the case. It's only the Magnum.
So that is the perfect, perfect. Yeah. Okay.
And because the bigger ones, there are about 10 sizes bigger than Magnum.
Yeah.
But those, they don't do the second fermentation in the bottle.
Ah,
because it's too big and the risk of explosion is so much higher. And
wouldn't be
cellars.
Wouldn't be that good with the Nebuchadnezzar going.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we were actually shown an exploded bottle in one of the cellars, and it nowadays, of course, they store it differently. But before, it also affected the bottles around it. So if one would explode, then the whole, all of them okay. next to it would explode too, and you would lose. Some years they've lost up to, you know, a good few percent of the production just because one exploded. Yeah. So all the bigger ones, the Magnum, are filled up later and then just put a cork on it and then sent out.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, but it's I'm fascinated.
Also, the capital of Champagne, Epernay, a little village. It's not a village. It's actually a town. It was very lovely. It was very nice. Yeah. We stayed there and they have an Avenue de Champagne, which is like, I'm sorry, but for, I'm not religious, but if I were, this would be like visiting a highly religious place, because there you have these amazing buildings and all of the big houses are represented on that one street. And you're like, wow, it's very interesting. And it was actually, the last night on our road trip, we also stayed in Rennes, which is a big city in comparison. But I was surprised because that is also supposed to be very champagne-y and everything. And that's where Lanson is, that's where Veuve Clicquot is, all of these, like some of the big houses. Mm. But that was very un-champagne-y. It didn't really have that feeling, that theme. It was just like being in a big city with some champagne. Like, it was much, much more interesting to stay in Epernay and see all these big houses and, you know, hear the correlation and see where everyone gets their grapes from and where they grow them and all of this stuff. They're like, yes, it's right up here on the hill. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. So if you do go to Champagne, I would suggest staying in Epernay instead of Rennes. Anyway, side note, this Avenue de Champagne is the most expensive street in the world.
Oops.
And that is not because of the real estate. It's not because of the houses, because they're beautiful. They're mansions, some of them, and they are amazingly gorgeous. But that's not the reason.
Okay.
It's the reason because of the cellars. It's what's underneath the street.
Ah.
Oh, amazingly valuable. There are millions upon millions of bottles of champagne in these cellars. And just as an example, Moët & Chandon, their cellars run for 27 kilometers.
Oops.
And that's a fair deal of champagne.
It's a lot of champagne, girl.
My eyes were twinkling down there. Another thing that I learned that I didn't actually think of, and which is why in some of the big houses they have, you know, statues and stuff in the basement, in the cellars, which I thought was really odd. I'm like, why? I mean, I know it's fancy and all, but do you really need, like, statues of angels and, you know, stuff like that in the cellars? But actually, yes, because this is where they were used as bomb shelters for the World War.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And some of these, like, bigger areas were used, for example, as a place to pray or, you know, just to get a little bit more, you know, real life down there. So they had like a little cave for the church, and they had a little cave for there, blah, blah, blah. But I was thinking about it. If I were against, you know, please don't, but if I were to be stuck in a war, I'm thinking a champagne cellar is not the worst place.
I don't know, to seek
shelter.
Yeah. Imagine that they would have a room filled with aged cheese. Along with the champagne.
Yes.
That would be, then you would survive, because I don't think living a couple of months only on champagne, I don't think that's that healthy.
Have you not heard about the champagne diet?
Yes, I don't know. I don't know how much truth you can find in that story.
Probably not.
No.
And now I thought we would go over a little bit to pairing and all of these things, because we went to a very special house, which I had discovered already here at home, but we finally visited it and it was fantastic. And this guy was so great. His wife is the winemaker, and he does the sort of the tours and, you know, does a little this and that. How cool is that? Anyway, he taught me that, and this is why this is so low carb and keto friendly, is that champagne loves fat.
What?
So, yes. So you get all the flavors and everything come out a lot better if you pair it with something fat that you eat. His suggestion was, which wasn't, you know, very low carb, but his favorite pairing was a very good champagne with French fries, or actually Belgian fries, but anyway.
Yeah, okay. Oh,
so that was his idea. But, you know, so that's why it tastes so good with all the cheeses, the olives, you know, all of these things that are fatty, because champagne loves fat.
I just have to say something in this, talking about this, that I seldom drink red wine. I almost never drink white wine. But actually champagne, you can drink it with a lot of different foods.
You really can. And this
yes.
The grape Pinot Noir, when it becomes a champagne, if that's the only grape it contains, it becomes a Blanc de Noir. So white of the black. So the white wine of the black grape, basically.
Okay.
And those are a lot more, they're always grown on north-facing slopes to ensure more acidity. And this is why this particular type of champagne pairs excellently with steak.
Ah, you know, me and a friend, we tried several years ago, we bought those small bottles, you know. You can buy smaller bottles because we decided to try which champagne you can eat with, like, a really nice filet or, yeah. And we figure out that Bollinger is perfect. I don't know if that's a north slope with a more acidity or something. Is it? Yes, please say yes.
I don't.
Yeah, you don't know. Okay, yes. Never mind.
I don't know officially, but yes.
Yeah, but it's Bollinger is quite, it's like, more like, you know, really full.
Heavier,
but, yeah, so that's perfect.
Yeah, it's a bit heavier, so I think that could actually be more Pinot Noir heavy champagne.
It could be.
Look at me sounding really nerdy.
Yeah, but you're the expert of in my eyes now, really. So,
well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if the champagne is made on Chardonnay only, it's called Blanc de Blanc, so white wine of the white grape.
Yeah.
And that you should pair with white protein. So chicken,
fish,
seafood, all of these things. Because it's a lighter, it's a, you know, more suitable taste for that.
Okay.
And this guy also taught me, which was fantastic, that this is a direct quote. Champagne is like another friend at the table. Choose wisely.
Goosebumps.
I'm telling you, this guy is my new best friend. And then he also said that any champagne with more than 5 grams of sugar per liter and has to be served ice cold has something to hide.
Hallelujah. Amen. Yeah.
I almost hugged him at this point.
Yeah, you did.
The low dosages, so the low sugar content, are chosen to preserve the purity of the wines and their natural expression. So basically where it's been grown and how it's been harvested and all of this stuff, so that you can really have more flavor of that so that it's not hidden by sugar, which I thought was very, very interesting. At the same time, sometimes a slight dosage, so nothing more than extra brut or brut, which is brut is up to 12 grams per liter, I think. Yes. But sometimes that helps to complement the natural flavors in the wine. So just going for only Brut Nature or zero dosage or non-dosage is not the smartest with all wines, because some wines, some champagnes actually benefit in terms of flavor with a little bit of sugar. Not much, but a little.
Okay.
That was also
interesting. But would it be like over 5 grams per liter in those cases?
No, he said up to 12 grams, so a Brut, but some, if it's made properly, it won't have more than 5, 7, 8 grams.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe. Just as the last bit, I wanted to give my top 3 recommendations of champagne houses.
Yeah.
These are actually, interestingly enough, these are all ecological. So none of them use pesticides and stuff. They're all, 2 of them are actually biodynamic as well. So Demeter and all of that certified, which is cool. So the first one is my best friend forever, André Bazin.
Okay.
They're a really, really interesting company because they really take care of the natural flavors of the wine itself rather than trying to make some mainstream champagne that might not be as good for the ones who know what they're looking for. But all of their stuff is very low sugar. All their stuff is under, I think it was 8 grams. So they don't have a demi-sec, which is up to, you know, 30, 40 grams of sugar per liter. So that was really interesting. And I'm fascinated by their view on how to grow things and how to help the vines grow more and faster and to get how to get them to grow the roots further down rather than coming up again. It was very, very fascinating. And you can, in my opinion, you can really taste it in the wine that they take such good care of their crops. Number two is Champagne Fleury, which was in another area of the Champagne region. So this is the Bar area is what they call it, which was kind of funny, I thought. But anyway, they were very, very interesting because they also, they are ecological, so they don't use any pesticides or anything. They had a very interesting way of fertilizing their vines, which involved the cow horn.
What?
Yeah, it was very interesting. And they're also biodynamic and everything. So it was very, very interesting to see their collection of champagnes. And also, they are also very low sugar. So they had a lot of options in terms of really zero dosage where they add nothing. Mm-hmm. But also a few that had a little bit, you know, 5-7 grams, something like that.
Yeah, but if you take one glass, yeah.
Exactly. Then it really doesn't matter. And this is something that I really learned as well.
Yeah.
And then number three.
Dum-da-dum.
Is Leclerc Briand.
Okay.
They had such an interesting selection of wines, of champagnes. And they also had something that they called, very special champagne, that they called the Abyss. Which is basically champagne that has been gone through its second fermentation underwater. So 60 meters below the surface.
That would be a lot of pressure now.
Yeah, but the thing is that at 60 meters, apparently, it is exactly the same pressure outside and inside of the bottle. So you don't actually get, you don't lose any, you know, because some of it always sips through the cork. But you don't lose any of the flavors. Well, that was very special that we tried.
But how do they bring them up? Never mind. My husband is a diver. I will talk to him. I will ask him.
So those were my very informative tips about the Champagne region in France that I recently visited.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Thank you very much. This was super interesting. I just a small question. The food wasn't that bad either.
No, the food was good.
Thank you very much, Hannah. This was really awesome. And if people decide, or of course they are going to get their tickets now to come to LCU 18 in November in Mallorca to join us, you will happily join them for a glass of very nice cava, of course.
Yes. I did actually see that the hotel does have a particular brand of champagne too. So maybe
think outside the box. Maybe take a champagne instead of Spanish cava. Okay. I can tell you tonight, I will actually have a small glass of cava and really enjoy it and think about everything you taught me today.
Awesome. Okay. I'll see you next week.
Same. Bye-bye.